Welcome back, Deep Divers. You guys were really curious about how those 12 tribes divvied up the Promised Land in the Book of Joshua. So we took a deep dive into chapters 13 through 19. And, well, let me tell you, the details of this inheritance deal are a lot more interesting than you might think.
Yeah, it's not just as simple as winner takes all, is it?
Right.
These chapters, they paint a really fascinating picture. A picture of a process that's both, like, divinely ordained, but also, like, surprisingly human at the same time, with all sorts of twists and turns along the way.
Exactly. I mean, we all remember those big epic battles from early Joshua, right? Like the walls of Jericho, the sun standing still. And then we hit these later chapters and realize, oh, wait a minute. It wasn't that easy. Like, it wasn't just showing up and claiming your prize.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it actually starts with God himself. Right at the beginning of chapter 13, God tells Joshua that there is still very much land to possess. And Dr. Howard, she points out that this is like a huge contrast to those early, you know, declarations of complete victory.
So it's almost like a divine reality check. Okay, so maybe not a walk in the park after all.
Yeah.
But were there any like specific areas or groups that were especially difficult to drive out?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like the Jebusites who controlled Jerusalem, they weren't fully driven out at this point.
Really?
Yeah. And chapter 15 actually says that they were still living there, like right alongside the tribe of Judah.
Wait a minute, Jerusalem. But that's not just some random place. That's arguably the most important city in the entire land. Why do you think that Judah couldn't conquer it, especially with all the emphasis that's put on their destiny?
That's a great question. And I think it really gets in a big theme we see throughout these chapters. It's this tension between the idea of a quick and complete conquest and the reality on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that the Jebusites are still in Jerusalem, it's sort of like a ticking time bomb, almost like foreshadowing future conflicts.
Yeah.
And it also suggests that possessing the land was going to be a lot more complicated than they maybe initially thought.
Wow. Okay, talk about foreshadowing.
Yeah.
It kind of makes you wonder if those early victories maybe made some of the tribes a little overconfident.
Yeah, maybe so.
But let's go back a bit. Can we talk about how this whole division process actually worked? Was it like, I don't know, drawing straws? Or did each tribe have like specific criteria for their land?
It was definitely more organized than drawing straws.
Okay, good.
God instructed them to divide the land by lot. And we see that happening in chapter 18 at Shiloh. But it wasn't just like a random lottery. It was a process that involved both human effort and divine guidance.
Okay, so like a combination of careful planning and trusting in God's will.
Exactly. Like in chapter 18, we see that surveyors went out and carefully mapped out the territory. And this all happened before they even cast lots.
Okay.
It's almost like God was saying, look, I've promised you this land, but you also have to do your part to understand it and divide it fairly.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you can't really split up something if you don't know what you're splitting up.
Right? Right, exactly.
But before we go too deep into all those surveys and the casting of lots, there's one tribe that really stands out. The Levites. They weren't exactly lining up for prime real estate, were they?
No, they weren't. The Levites, they were set apart for religious service, so they didn't receive land like the other tribes did. Mm-hmm. Their inheritance was something completely different. And Dr. Howard actually argues that it's actually a lot more profound.
Okay, I'm intrigued. So if they weren't getting fields and vineyards, what were they getting? Some like ancient version of, I don't know, stock options?
Oh, not quite. Their inheritance is actually described in three really powerful ways.
Okay.
So first, God himself is their inheritance. Mm-hmm. Second, they receive the offerings that are made to God.
Okay.
And finally, they're given the priesthood of the Lord as their heritage.
Wow. I mean, that's a pretty radical concept. I mean, in a society that's so focused on land ownership, to say that God is your inheritance must have sounded really, really strange. Did this ever create any resentment or tension with the other tribes?
It's interesting you say that, because while the text doesn't like specifically talk about resentment, it does really emphasize how dependent the Levites were on the other tribes. Yeah. I mean, they literally got their food and support from the other Israelites.
Yeah.
It must have taken like a really high level of trust and commitment for that system to actually work.
Yeah, it's like a fascinating social experiment, isn't it? You have this whole tribe dedicated to spiritual stuff, and they rely completely on everyone else's generosity. Mm. Makes me wonder if something like that could even work today, you know? In a world where everyone seems so focused on individual success and money,
Yeah, it definitely challenges our modern ideas of what it means to have a good life.
Definitely.
But speaking of success, we should probably talk about a tribe that got a pretty big chunk of land, Judah.
Oh, yeah, Judah. Their section in chapter 15 is like the longest one. It's almost like a whole book in itself.
Yeah.
Why do you think the authors spent so much time on their portion?
Well, I think it's about more than just the size of their land. It's about their importance in the whole story of Israel.
Okay.
Remember back in Genesis when Jacob blesses his sons?
Yeah.
He prophesies that the scepter, which symbolizes rulership, will stay with Judah.
Right.
That's a huge deal.
So this whole land allocation thing, it's not just about dividing up property. It's like setting the stage for what's going to happen later,
Yeah.
the line of King David, and ultimately the fulfillment of God's promises.
Exactly. And there's another detail Dr. Howard points out about the description of Judah's inheritance.
Okay.
It's the language itself.
Oh, interesting.
The author uses all these different Hebrew verbs to describe the boundaries, words like reached, ran, goes out.
So it's not just a boring list of landmarks.
Right. It's more like poetry. It's like the author wants us to really experience the land, to feel its shape and imagine those boundaries being drawn right there on the earth.
Yeah, it's like we're right there with those ancient surveyors, trekking through the wilderness, marking out the territory.
Exactly.
And speaking of surveyors, chapter 18 describes this whole process of sending them out to map the land, you know, before they did the final division by lot. It sounds so organized, almost like a government project.
Yeah.
Did each tribe send out their own surveyors? Or was it more of a group effort?
It seems like it was a team effort.
Yeah.
Like Joshua started it, but then representatives from different tribes went out and did the work. The text mentions seven tribes that still hadn't received their inheritance.
So it wasn't just everyone grabbing whatever they could get.
No.
There's this real sense of working together,
Yes,
you know,
yes.
like they all had a shared responsibility to make sure the division was fair.
Absolutely. It reminds us that even when they were doing this huge task dividing up the promised land, they still needed to cooperate and make decisions together.
Yeah, and I bet that wasn't always easy, especially with so many different personalities and the potential for arguments.
Oh, for sure. In fact, there's this kind of funny story about Joseph's descendants, Ephraim and Manasseh. They thought that the land they got wasn't enough for all their people. So they went to Joshua and basically complained that they needed more space.
It's like that classic sibling rivalry, but on a national scale.
Exactly.
So what did Joshua say to that?
Well, Joshua, being the practical guy that he was, basically told them, look, if you want more land, go clear it yourselves and fight for it. He
Yeah.
wasn't going to just give it to them.
I love that. It's a great reminder that even in these big stories of God's promises and inheritance, you still have human ambition and bargaining and maybe even a little bit of entitlement. It makes it feel real, you know, like something we can relate to even today.
Totally. It highlights the human side of this divine plan. And actually, it's interesting to contrast this attitude of Joseph's descendants with the story of Zelophehad's daughters in chapter 17.
Oh, yeah, that's a powerful story. They challenged the inheritance laws because their father had died without any sons.
Right.
It's such a fascinating glimpse into how God's justice can work, even in a system that favors men.
It really is. Their story actually starts back in Numbers 27 when they bravely went to Moses and asked for the right to inherit their father's land, even though at the time, land was only supposed to pass down through sons,
Yeah.
and both Moses and God agreed with them.
Wow.
And then in Joshua 17, we see that promise fulfilled when they get their inheritance along with the other tribes.
It's amazing how God cares about each person. Even in these big stories of national inheritance and conquest,
Absolutely.
He sees their need, he listens to their request, and he makes sure that justice is done. It makes you wonder what other little hidden stories are tucked away in these chapters, just waiting to be discovered.
Right. It reminds us that the Bible isn't just about abstract ideas or historical events. It's about real people and their lives.
And speaking of people, we can't forget the leader himself, Joshua.
Right.
What about his inheritance? Did he get to choose first, or was it decided by lot, like everyone else?
His inheritance is actually described at the very end of chapter 19.
Oh, okay.
He gets his portion at Timnath-Serah in the hill country of Ephraim. It's interesting because it's almost an afterthought. Like all the other tribes get their land first, and then finally it mentions Joshua.
So it's not exactly front and center, but it still seems fitting for the guy who led the Israelites into the Promised Land. But why do you think the author put this information at the end? It's almost like a footnote.
Maybe it's to emphasize that Joshua, even though he was the leader, was still under God's authority.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't exempt from the process of dividing the land, even though he was the one running the show.
That's a powerful message about humility and submitting to God.
Right.
It reminds me of that proverb, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. Even Joshua, this great conqueror, had to answer to God.
Exactly. And there's another little detail in verse 51 of chapter 19. It's the order of names.
Okay.
Eleazar the priest is actually mentioned before Joshua.
So even when they're talking about Joshua's own inheritance, they're highlighting the religious aspect.
Right.
It's like they're saying, yeah, Joshua's the leader, but it's God's land.
Mm-hmm.
And his priests play a crucial role in how it's distributed.
Exactly. It reinforces the idea that this whole thing wasn't just about political or military power. It was about fulfilling God's promises and creating a nation dedicated to serving him.
So even though all the tribes have their land now, I have a feeling the story isn't quite over. Remember that ticking time bomb we talked about before?
The Jebusites still in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're right to be a little suspicious. Because while the overall picture in Joshua is one of victory, there are these little hints that things aren't totally settled. Like, there's still potential for trouble.
Yeah, it's like those small towns in horror movies that seem all peaceful at first.
Right.
You just know that something bad is about to happen. You just don't know what or when.
I like that analogy. But really, Dr. Howard argues that these unresolved conflicts are really important for understanding how we get from the book of Joshua to the book of Judges.
Okay.
They show us the tension between the idea of a complete conquest and the messy reality.
So even though they've divided up the land and God's promises have been fulfilled, in a way, the Israelites' journey isn't over yet.
Right.
They still have choices to make, battles to fight, and this responsibility to live faithfully in the land they've been given.
It's a powerful reminder that inheriting a promise is one thing, but actually living faithfully in that inheritance, that's a constant challenge.
Yeah.
It takes constant effort, obedience, and reliance on God.
And it's like that for us today, too.
Absolutely.
We might not be dividing up physical land,
mm-hmm.
but we all have promises from God, gifts to use, and the responsibility to live out our faith in the world.
For sure.
But before we jump into those challenges and what happens next in Israel's story, let's take a minute to recap what we've learned about this land division in Joshua. What stands out to you the most from these chapters?
I think for me, it's that image of the Levites and their inheritance being God himself. It's just so different from how we think today, you know?
Yeah.
In a world where everyone is always chasing after stuff, it's such a radical idea. And it really gets you thinking about what's truly important. Like, what kind of inheritance are we building, not just for ourselves, but for others?
It really makes you think, doesn't it? Like, what do we truly value? Where do we put our trust?
Yeah. And the story of Zelophehad's daughters is so inspiring, too. It's like this reminder that God cares about justice, about fairness, even for people who are often pushed to the side.
Absolutely. It shows us God's heart for every single person.
And how he's willing to challenge the rules to make sure everyone has a chance to experience his blessings, no matter who they are.
It's not just about those individual stories either.
Yeah.
Right. The whole process of dividing the land with all the careful measuring and the casting of lots, it shows a God who's in control, but also a God who works through people.
That's it. It's this amazing mix of human effort and divine guidance. It's like God is inviting us to work with him, to be a part of his plan.
But even with all the promises fulfilled and the land divided up, there's still that sense of, I don't know, like something's not quite finished, to those ticking time bombs we talked about, like the Jebusites in Jerusalem.
Right.
They're still there.
Yeah, you're right. The land division in Joshua, it's not just a story from the past. It's like a parable, a lesson for us as believers today. We've been given these amazing promises, an inheritance that's way bigger than any piece of land. But to actually live in that inheritance, to be faithful to it, that takes work. It takes being alert and being willing to face challenges.
It's like we've been given the keys to this incredible kingdom.
Yeah.
But there's still work to do, you know, battles to fight. And we have to take care of this gift we've been given.
And just like the Israelites, we're going to mess up sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to face setbacks and things won't always go our way. But Joshua reminds us that even when things are tough, God's grace is enough. He's with us, guiding us, giving us strength. And in the end, he leads us to victory.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a question. If the Levites' inheritance was God himself, what does that mean for us? What are the things, besides possessions and stuff, that we should be valuing and nurturing and passing on to the next generation?
That's a great question to think about, because in the end, it's not about the land we have here on earth. It's about the eternal inheritance we get through faith in Jesus. And that's a deep dive that we can spend our whole lives exploring.
And on that note, we'll leave you to ponder those deeper truths. Thanks for joining us on this journey through the book of Joshua.